The show's Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. It's your connection to local music and more. We explore lots of different performances and other arts-related events. And that's kind of what the topic of the first part of our show is today. It's actually about a film, documentary film, that for the most part takes place in Japan. And it follows a former professor at the University of Illinois, and the film was made by a retired professor of the University of Illinois, David Plath, who's with us in the studio. And the reason that they're actually here is David wrote to me and pointed out that there is a score created by a guy who's actually been our guest a number of times on this show, Jason Finkelman, who was involved with the Center for World Music and lots of other endeavors involving various types of world music. So we'll talk in the first part of the show, and then later on, we will welcome Stephen Fiol, who is the director for the University of Illinois Opera Program's production of Benjamin Britten's comic chamber opera called Albert Herring, which opens tonight at the Krannert Center on the U of I campus in Urbana. So that's the topic. Those are the topics for today's show. Hope you'll stick around. Music that comes from what has become a favorite CD of mine out of what is growing an increasingly growing list of favorites the longer I host this show. It's from Bela Fleck, the banjo player, Throw Down Your Heart, the Africa Sessions. And this is part one of those sessions. The second volume is going to be out soon. It may be out by now. And this was Bela Fleck with a guitarist from Mali named Jelimadi Tonkura. Hoping I'm saying his name reasonably. Mariam is the name of the music. And the whole disc is Bela Fleck's explorations with various African musicians. And he was at the Canopy Club in Urbana, and I knew about this because, actually, I don't remember how. Somebody told me about it, probably his agent, I think, and an African musician and his band were at the Canopy Club. It was one of the best shows I've seen of just about anything. On today's show, Live and Local, we have David Plath, who is a professor emeritus of anthropology at the University of Illinois, and Jason Finkelman, who works with the Center for World Music at the University of Illinois, and also the Sudden Sound series at the Krannert Art Museum, and some other events that he curates. And we'll maybe touch on a couple of those other events going on. I just did a quick peek at some of the world music events this weekend, and there's quite a few, actually, including tonight. But they're here to talk about a film that will have its... Is it the total premiere or the area premiere, David?
It'll be the first open public showing. We've had two or three small invited private groups, that, mostly of colleagues that I've shown it to. So this is the first open public showing anywhere.
And it's a film called Can't Go Native, with a question mark at the end, produced and directed by David W. Plath. And the subject is, well, there's several subjects, but the person who is the subject is Keith Brown. And a correction from what I said in the introduction, he is a professor emeritus of anthropology at the University of Pittsburgh. But more to the point, he has had a long, almost 40-year relationship with almost 50-year relationship
50, yeah.
With I had to go back to do a quick math, because his relationship with the town of Mizuzawa, Japan, is as old as I am, because he started there the same year I was born, which is an interesting because I noticed that one of the commentators in your film says exactly the same thing. I'm afraid I don't remember his name, but I got to see, I won't say I've seen the whole thing, I've seen about half of it, and it's really quite beautiful. And the subject is not only Keith Brown, but the subject is the relationship between him and the town, and also the development of life in Japan, and also rural versus city life and all kinds of other things. What gave you the idea to produce this film and make this the topic?
I wanted to do a film like this about an anthropologist doing his work for many years. Years ago, I was able to do a studio interview series with a bunch of anthropologists, but we weren't able to go out and see them at work and film them at work. This first time I was able to get enough money to do that in Mizusawa and in Ames, Iowa, which is Keith's hometown.
And tell us a little bit about your own background. What have been the subjects of your researches and teachings? And, you know, if someone were to follow you around in your work, what would they have discovered?
Well, they'd have to go to several sites in Japan and one in northern Thailand. I've been more of a gadfly than Keith, who's gone back to this same community almost every year for nearly 50 years. Next year, he'll celebrate his 50th anniversary of this long-term relationship. So I've investigated a number of different subjects. Probably the most interesting to most people are Japanese women divers.
And why?
They're shellfish divers. And among other things, it blows any of the stereotypes of Madame Butterfly that you have about Japanese women. I mean, these are very physical women who work several hours a day diving for abalone.
And how did you latch onto a topic like that? I mean, you could ask this about any of a number of anthropological, this is very hard to say, researches, but how did you latch onto that?
It was a rebound from having done a book about sort of middle-class urban Japanese families and wanting to say, well, I want to do something different. I want to get a different kind of Japanese. And I stumbled into this, in a sense, through a long-term Japanese colleague of mine who had been doing research as a physical anthropologist on their physiology. And for years he'd said, come look at them. This is an interesting topic. And I said, oh, well, I've seen the tourist posters. And when I finally went there, I realized this was something that really needed a long-term investigation. I spent more than a year with them.
The tourist posters really didn't say much of anything about it, I gather.
Well, the tourist posters are built around models from urban settings who pose as the divers.
And what has, tell me a little bit about your relationship with Keith Brown. You said before we actually opened the microphones here that you've known him for a very, very long time.
Yeah, I did my very first field work about 2 years before Keith did, under fairly similar circumstances in a regional town. And I met him. He had just come back from his field work and was a graduate student at the University of Chicago. And we've been good buddies ever since.
Have you shared field trips?
Not in terms of actual research. We've gone over at the same time occasionally, but done our separate research.
And give us a little bit of the, first of all, the reason for the title and the question mark. Can't go native? Title of the film.
Well, anthropologists often talk about how important it is to get as much involved in local life as possible, but not to try to become local, that you need that, artistic distance from the local scene at the same time that you're very much involved with it.
And if you've been going there for nearly 50 years, every year, or virtually every year, presumably for some period of what, weeks, months, would he go?
Yeah, at times he and the family have gone for a whole year, but most often it's a few weeks or a few months, yeah.
And if he's taking the family, then that sort of even reinforces the question more, which is, has he managed to keep that distance?
Yeah, I think very effectively. It's not an easy thing to do when you've known a family for two or three generations and been deeply involved in their life. And he's so tied into that community that there are times when, if he's there during the annual festival, he has to take part in it. I mean, he can't not take part in things.
Well, he would be very rude, you know,
right,
knowing these people right all that time.
Right.
And that's, you know, so that's part of the reason for the question. I mean, he has worked to keep the distance, but yet at some level he can't have kept the distance. I mean, he's become a part of all of that, and he goes there for himself as much as for his research, I would think.
Well, one way he manages it, there's one family that he's known since the very first trip. has been deeply involved with them, he defines them as not part of the study.
That is probably a way to do it, because you can't know everybody in the town. How big a town is it, Mississauga?
Mississauga is probably about 50,000, but much of his research has been in a rural area of Mississauga, a community of maybe 3,000 or 4,000.
Oh, I had the impression that it was more like the 3,000 or 4,000, just from the intro to the thing. The various topics that get covered in the film, each of the chapters has a title. What would you say to somebody who, you know, is, let's say you're Roger Ebert, and you've picked this as one of your overlooked films, as he used to call his festival, and you want to encourage somebody to go to this film? How would you describe the progress of it, the topics of it?
Well, in the first place,
you don't have to actually review it and pronounce your opinion of it, since you did make the film.
Yeah. Roger Ebert would overlook a film. It's not made for film.
You never know. Have you sent it to him?
No. It's not made for film festivals, or, you know, it's made for classroom use, self-study, for PBS. I've had previous documentaries broadcast by some PBS stations. I suspect this one will. I suspect WILL-TV will also broadcast it, as they have a couple of my previous ones. The progression of topics, wow, that's a tough one to try to answer.
Or an overview, some of the topics. What would want somebody experience in this film?
Well, you'll see Keith studying what has been his main topic, and that, as it is for so many anthropologists, and that's kinship and family. There's an extensive segment on that. You'll see him, for example, talking to descendants of former samurai who were 400 years ago garrisoned in the castle that Mississauga had. You'll see him talking to businessmen. Like so many small towns in the Midwest, the downtown has hollowed out. Downtown businesses have moved to the edge of the city where they have parking lots. I mean, there are changes going on in what I call flyover country in Japan that are like flyover country in the U.S. where we live.
So that much isn't any different from here?
No, there are a lot of similarities as well as, of course, differences in terms of Japanese-style festivals, festival music. Jason was able to... I was given two festival flutes from Mississauga just before I left, and Jason was good enough to incorporate those in the music.
Which, of course, we're going to get to in just a moment and hear some of that music. You haven't mentioned the beauty of the countryside, the beauty of the people, the beauty, you know, just the visual aspect. This is what struck me. And
thank
also
you.
The fact that you see Keith Brown a lot in his bicycle.
Yeah, he continues most of the time, as he has for almost 50 years, to do his research by bicycle, the argument being that this way, like the cop on the beat, he's close to the people. If he's running around in a car, it's much more difficult, particularly given Japanese narrow roads in the countryside, to suddenly stop and talk with somebody, because where are you going to park?
And you can just stop and get off, in the case of a bicycle.
On the bike, yeah.
And have some great conversations. I liked also the one comment that he makes towards the beginning, which is that on a bike, in a car, everybody thinks you're going somewhere.
Right.
On a bike, you don't necessarily look like you're going anywhere. You might just be riding your bike, which makes you potentially more accessible to other people.
And as he says, and as I think most anthropologists find when they're doing extended field work, it's those little spontaneous comments or spontaneous topics that people raise that are often some of your very best information, because they make you think about issues and topics that you might never have thought of, but that are important to them, and that's part of what you're trying to find.
We're talking with David Plath, who is Emeritus Professor of Anthropology at the University of Illinois, and we will be speaking with Jason Finkelman in just a moment about some of his music after we hear the music that goes with this film, that is the soundtrack for this film, Can't Go Native, which will have its public premiere next Tuesday, May 4th, my mom's birthday, as it happens, which I have to keep reminding myself, or I'll be in the doghouse, at 7 o'clock in the Knight Auditorium at the Spurlock Museum on the University of Illinois campus in Urbana. That's next Tuesday, and admission is free for the film. Let's hear a couple of tracks from the soundtrack, and then a question for you, David, and then several for you, Jason. Jason Finkelman and David Plath here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Those were a couple of tracks from the soundtrack to David Plath's film, documentary film, Can't Go Native, about Keith Brown's relationship with the town of Mizusawa, Japan. And Keith, how did you... I keep wanting to call you Keith. You're David. Partly because Keith's name is first on the poster that's sitting right in front of me and is the topic of that film. How did you encounter Jason and ask him to do the music for it?
This is one of those chance remarks that paid off in gold. I was borrowing a corner of his office because I needed a space to do some editing, and I moved my editing equipment in there. We got acquainted, and I thought, percussionist, he probably doesn't do any composing. Percussionists don't compose, do they? And so I asked him one day if he did any composing, and he said yes. And I said, well, have you ever done any for a film? He said yes for a couple of times. And it took off from there. And he's done a marvelous job with this. You expect a composer to sustain the rhythm of the edit on a film. But Jason's gone far beyond that.
Tell me what you mean by the rhythm of the edit.
Well, one of the most important things an editor does is establish a rhythm for each of the segments, and it may vary from segment to segment. And in terms of the speed of the cuts and length of the cuts and things like that. Well, if the music is at a totally different rhythm, it can get really confusing and mess up the whole program. So Jason not only did that, what he's done and what I really like is that he has added a third or fourth or fifth voice to the chorus that is an audiovisual production. It's almost, you know, it becomes almost like opera, where you've got different voices telling different stories simultaneously. Not every composer for film can do that. And it was just a wonderful surprise for me to find that, particularly since he was operating under handicaps because he was dealing with a man who's a monotone and who has no vocabulary for explaining to him what I wanted in terms of music. All I could tell him was what I didn't want.
That sometimes works as well. Then the composer gets freedom up front and then, you know, can get the restrictions a little later. And Jason, you actually suggested a question to me, which is a very good one, which is that if people who've heard any of your segments on this show in the last year, including recently, may remember that your musical specialty is music of Brazil. But this is a film about Japan.
Right. Well, one of the things that David and I discussed early on in deciding whether I was the right fit for the film, I wanted to be sure that what I was going to present was not, I was not going to try to compose Japanese music for the film, that this is what I do. I play African and Brazilian percussion. I utilize in composing settings, electronics, synthesizer, you know, what I have available to me to add to that, and the way to incorporate the two. So the traditional instruments that I play, how they might relate to the, how they could underscore the action or the tone of the moment or support the text. And I have a lot of experience with that in working with Cynthia Oliver, my wife, in her dance performances, which are heavily text-based. So my role in working with dance and in working with film has always been about how can I support the conversation that's going on? How could I help move this conversation a little quicker or transition to something else? So a lot of the music composed for this film is mainly to support what conversations are happening, what interviews are happening, and then also to add acceleration or support to the movement scenes, like the bike scenes that you mentioned earlier. There's a whole theme for that, and the last piece that we heard is one of the many sections that is a theme that I built upon just for those scenes where he's riding his bike. So,
do you have sort of a bike riding leitmotif?
that's what we're talking about, yeah. So we came up with different themes for different areas of the film. Like when he's talking about growing up in his childhood, we had a local clarinet player, Nathaniel Ruiz, who is a young artist. And so I liked his playing. I liked his rapport that he had with me in improvising. And I asked him to contribute to the film. So we, you know, he came in and added like a kind of an old style jazz feel to those scenes. And then the flutes that David mentioned, I have to acknowledge Tom Painter, a wonderful jazz player in our community who plays keyboards and flute and has been associated with me from the New Orbit Ensemble and other projects that I've had in town. And Tom was able to come in and, you know, where I was very elementary with being able to make sound with the flutes, he was able to create, you know, some wonderful supportive melodies to incorporate along with the music that I had put together. So, for example, also in that last track that we heard, you'll hear the flute in there, and it comes up in different occasions. So the flute music itself becomes also a theme in the movie as well.
Well, I was thinking while watching the film that even though it may be Afro-Brazilian music underneath, there's so many affinities to Japanese mm-hmm. music, you know, some of the percussive nature of the various instruments you play or got involved in the film, you know, could be, you could easily substitute, say, the koto, for example, and have some of the same percussive melodic
right.
things. And even the clarinet, you do use the Japanese flutes, but even the clarinet can sound flute-like depending upon who's playing it and how.
Mm-hmm. Well, so with the African harps, I could tune them to wherever I want. So what was very interesting is that Ann Prescott, who works for the Center for East Asian Pacific Studies, made a comment upon seeing the film, wow, that's this particular koto scale. You know, so she had already heard, you know, she was reading into it in a different way. So, you know, I didn't intend to do that in particular. I wasn't looking at that scale and making that what it was. I came up with a tuning that I thought was appropriate for, you know, this music. And I always try to approach a new project with other new elements. So I might choose to play instruments that I don't normally perform regularly in concert with. And I also selected some instruments that I don't normally play anymore or very often. So,
for example?
Well, for example, if you want to play a real short track, track number 30 is one with an instrument called a jingo bow. Now, this is a one-of-a-kind instrument that my
teacher... A what?
A jingo bow. I don't know. It's kind of a mix between a birimbau. It's got a long neck, and it has a gourd at the bottom with a skin over it, and it's got a little bridge. And instead of plucking it, you can hit it. So I incorporated that with some overtone flute playing. So I've got a flute from Tuva. I've got this instrument that is a one-of-a-kind instrument that my teacher Adi Mukumba made called a jingo bow, and then some supportive bass from the synth.
Here we go, some music by Jason Finkelman for the film Can't Go Native by David Plath, both of them my guests on this portion of Live and Local. Sample of flute and the jingo bow. That is two words, right?
Yes.
Because at first, I don't know what I thought you said at first as one word. Music
all of
by...
This, all of this because I told him I didn't want Japanese music.
So you did give him that instruction up front.
Okay. I knew what I didn't want.
So you, all right, good. Well, then, so you had one so we and were, one only restriction initially. Right?
Well, and that was good because that was my requirement as well.
Yeah.
Well, I do want to point out that Keith Brown will be here for the screening, and he will be having a conversation with the audience following the screening.
Are you doing a performance before
and
or
I'm
after?
Doing a pre-screening performance, and I'll probably be featuring some of the instruments that I used in the film as part of the performance. I'll have the harp. Maybe I'll bring the jingo bow for kicks. And I will definitely have the birimbau and the kalimba that I used on the project.
And the film is next Tuesday, May 4th, 7 o'clock. The film starts at the Spurlock Museum on South Gregory Street in Urbana on the University of Illinois campus. And it's about an hour, so it's not a huge chunk of time out of your evening. You can go off and hear one of the other concerts that night, which are inevitably going on. I don't have my calendar out that far. And the pre-screening performance is at 6:30. Will Keith Brown be also at 6:30 or a little before? Also,
he'll be there, but the question and answer session will be after the screening.
Afterward. Okay, good. Well, that would make more sense, wouldn't it? people will have seen something about it. Well, before we go out with one more music track, I'll mention that coming up after this music is a conversation regarding the University of Illinois Opera Program production of Benjamin Britten's opera Albert Herring, which opens tonight and runs through Sunday. And I also want to run down just really quickly some of the other world music events just in the next few days, including tonight. I guess this qualifies as world music. It's certainly exotic sounding music. The group Tree Thump, whose performer, two of whose performers and makers of the didgeridoo were on this show a couple weeks ago, is at V. Picasso downtown Urbana. That's at 10 o'clock tonight. Fixed Fumbled Free is we focused on yesterday's show, Concert of Innovative New Compositions and Improvisations, and you're on that program.
That's correct.
Well,
I'm on both of those programs, actually.
How about that? You're just monopolizing the world music scene here.
No.
That's tonight.
I'm just thrilled to be part of it.
At 7:30 at the Cranford Art Museum. Tomorrow, we also focused on this on Monday's show. The Ecuadorian group Niawi is at the Spurlock Museum. There's a 4 o'clock workshop tomorrow and a 7:30 concert. Also tomorrow night, Mondoro with Rumba Nabiso are at the Cowboy Monkey in downtown Champaign. That's at 10 o'clock Friday night. I didn't know anything about this one, the Wide World of Urbana Community Concert, which I believe involves some world music, is Saturday from 4 to 7:30 at the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center, but that's in downtown Urbana. Sandunga is performing at the Iron Post Saturday night from 6 to 9. Concert of Balinese Music and Dance Sunday at the Levis Faculty Center on the U of I campus from 4 to 5:30. And the Asian Pacific American American Heritage Month Celebration Concert is from at Lincoln Square in Urbana from 2 to 4 on Sunday. It's just an incredible amount. And you can find out information on all this stuff, by the way, at the Robert E. Brown Center for World Music site, which is illinois.edu/.
It's music.illinois.edu/CWM.
For Center for World Music. There we go. And today's broadcast on FM 90.9 is made possible with support from these business partners: Provena Medical Group, Risk Management Commodities of Lafayette, Springfield Electric of Springfield. And these partners join the Friends of WYLL in making programs like this one possible. We thank you. And we have support also from Eastern Rug Gallery, offering over 1,000 guaranteed hand-knotted Oriental and Persian rugs made of pure wool or silk pile. Eastern Rug Gallery also offers a cleaning and repair service. Eastern Rug Gallery, 1402 South Neal Street in Champaign. A quick intro to this last track, Jason.
The last track is towards the end of the film. It's kind of a remembrance section. It's a very, mellow synth-based music, but there's also flute involved, and it's something I particularly like in the film. So,
and it was track 32, correct?
That's
so
right.
I have the right one up here. And I want to say thanks to Jason Finkelman, composer of the score for the film Can't Go Native, which was produced and directed by David Plath. Thank you very much, David, for coming.
Thanks for having us.
And for letting me know about it. And again, that premiere of the film next Tuesday, May 4th, 7 o'clock p.m., Knight Auditorium in the Spurlock Museum in Urbana, with a pre-screening performance by Jason at 6:30. And Keith Brown, subject of the film, will be there to answer questions afterwards. Music by Jason Finkelman here on Live and Local. Benjamin Britten's Albert Herring is next. Thank you. That was another track from the score for the film Can't Go Native, music by Jason Finkelman and producer and director David Plath, here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. And next on the show, Stephen Fiol is with us. He is stage director for University of Illinois Opera Program's production of Benjamin Britten's comic chamber opera is how it's billed. It's called Albert Herring, and it's not an opera that I know at all. In fact, I really can't say I know more than parts of three of Britten's operas, and I've only seen one in its entirety, and that was Peter Grimes, one of those wonderful productions that the Met sends to movie houses these days. And it was a brilliant. Did you see that?
I did not.
I thought I'd never seen it before, so I didn't have anything to compare it to, but I thought, you know, the production values on those things are brilliant. It was pretty stark. It's a rather stark story.
It is.
And dramatic, to say the least. And this one, not so much.
This is very much the opposite direction. It is a poking fun at British society and the coming of age of young Albert Herring.
Who is Albert Herring?
Albert Herring is a young lad raised by his mother, a single child in a greengrocer's shop, and he is held in by a domineering mother and a puritanical community in Loxford. It's a mythical town in southern coastal England.
This sounds like it could be Dickensian.
It is almost Dickensian. And he decides, with the help of a little bit of alcohol, after winning the May Day Queen event, could not come off because there was nobody suitable or righteous enough or virtuous enough among the young women of the community to be a queen. So they decided on a king, and Albert is selected. And he wins a purse, and with the purse, and aided by Sid and Nancy, the local romantic couple in the town, with a little rum in his lemonade at the celebration, he goes off on a bender, as it were, and he comes to know what life is all about on the other side.
Sid and Nancy, am I remembering right that that's the name of a film about Sid Vicious?
Yes, it is.
The Sex Pistols? Why
it
am
is.
I remembering that?
Because
any chance those names came from there?
I think so.
Seriously?
Could well be. I think it well might be. Yeah.
Have you researched this?
I have not researched.
You
that.
You will now, though. You've
I will
got to
now
be
that
extremely
you say
curious.
But it wouldn't surprise me.
I haven't seen this film, by the way. Steve, you've done stage direction for a number of productions at the University of Illinois over the years. Besides that, do you have an affiliation with the university here? I mean, your professional work is all at Millikan.
I am retired from Millikan, but I have been, over the last 10 years in particular, I've done 9 productions here. And
remind us of some of the others.
Started with a production of Albert Herring back in 2000, actually. And then I did Hansel and Gretel, a Sweeney Todd, Rappaccini's Daughter, The Scarecrow, forgetting some in there.
Yeah, I've seen at least a few of those so far. And I know you've been in one, if I've mentioned before in conversations, mm-hmm. and maybe more, was Die Fledermaus, the Bat as the jailer.
Right.
Comic jailer.
I actually began my U of I affiliation with a production of Susanna, in which I played Blitch. That's a Carlisle Floyd opera. I did that back in the early 80s.
Is Blitch another jailer? I don't know that at all.
No, Blitch is a revival preacher set in the South. It's based on an apocrypha story of Susanna.
And what was I just going to say? Oh, since this is your second production here of Albert Herring, I gather you've got an affinity for this.
I really enjoy this work. It's brilliant in its composition, on so many levels. It has a lot of musical references, about 20 some that I've found so far.
To
other musical
composers?
Works, Wagner, to Dvorak, to, you know, and Bizet, to name a few. But it's a brilliant work, beautifully composed. It was Britten's attempt to build a national opera tradition, as it were, a British opera tradition, with the chamber work, and it was the first of what he hoped would be a continuing tradition.
Tradition for exploring British society and opera?
British society as well as just British composed works.
So does this mean it was one of his earliest works then?
It is not one of his earliest, but it was one of the ones that he saw as sort of initiating this tradition of British opera, sort of following in Purcell's footsteps 300 years later.
Now, you brought along a recording with Britten leading the English Chamber Orchestra and featuring his partner Peter Pears as in the title role of Albert Herring. Mm-hmm. What have we got queued up first here?
Well, the first one we have here is in Act One, and they have come to the conclusion. They've gone through the list of names in Lady Billow's house. She is the town domineering figure.
This is a list of names for potential queens of the town.
And this is they've gathered the mayor and the superintendent of police and Wordsworth, the teacher, and who am I forgetting? Her housekeeper, and they meet on a regular basis to discuss community affairs, and one of them at this time happens to be the May Queen, the annual event. And they have come up with names, all presented. They all get shot down by Lady Billows and her spying housekeeper.
Because they're not virtuous enough,
right? They've been seen in the woods. They've been seen after dark doing such and such. They wear their skirts too high, whatever.
It says something for the town, I guess.
It says something indeed. And so what you're going to hear is the superintendent says, it begins, he says, has anybody ever thought of a king of the May? And so that's what we're going to listen to.
And the superintendent, Bud.
Bud. He is the superintendent of police, and he's a rather dim-witted gentleman who knows only one thing, and that is how to track down crime doers. But it has to be just a straight line shot to the results. Otherwise, he's not terribly effective.
Owen Branigan in the role of Superintendent Bud. And who else are we hearing sing here?
I can't remember all the folks on that recording.
Well, let's find out.
Yeah.
Well, I meant on this particular scene.
Oh, in this particular scene,
yeah.
We're hearing Lady Billows, Superintendent Bud.
And that's
we're
Sylvia
hearing
Fisher,
the vicar.
Lady Biller.
The vicar, Mr. Gedge, and then we are hearing the mayor, who is in this scene as well as the housekeeper, and then Lady Billows.
So you have to do your best to sort out who's who as we go along here. Benjamin Britten leading the English Chamber Orchestra in this scene from his opera Albert Herring, playing at the University of Illinois, opening tonight at 7:30 and running through Sunday at the Kranitz Center for the Performing Arts. This is Live and Local.
Begging your pardon, I'd like to say, has anyone heard of a King of the May?
King of the May?
Fantastic!
I never did!
Not in East Suffolk, I suppose you can't sing. Maybe it seems a riot's
It's a scene we sort of segued from one to another, really part of the same scene from Benjamin Britten's opera, Albert Herring, with the English Chamber Orchestra and soloists. Of course, Benjamin Britten is the conductor in this recording, and this is the current production at the University of Illinois from the opera department there. It opens tonight at the Kranitz Center for the Performing Arts. It's described as a comic chamber opera, and I imagine it's rather easy for one listening to this segment to imagine where's the comedy if you're just hearing it. So some of it must be physical.
It is absolutely physical. Yes, there's a wonderful comedy where Albert's lemonade is spiked in the new day in the May Day celebration. He wins a purse for his prize. Decides to go out and find out what life is about. And what we are going to hear next is the community has gathered. They assume that he has died because he hasn't come home last night. This is the day after the May Day celebration. And so they are singing a funeral dirge in on his behalf. And then, of course, he shows up quite alive.
Probably proving to be as little virtuous as the women would have been.
Indeed.
Chosen May Queen from Albert Herring on Live and Local. The dirge lamenting the presumed death of Albert Herring, which it turns out is exactly that, presumed and furthermore false, and performed here under the direction of the composer Benjamin Britten's Albert Herring, is at the Krannert Center. Opens tonight at 7:30, runs Friday and Saturday also at 7:30. A Sunday matinee is at 3 o'clock, and my guest on Live and Local for this portion of the show has been Stephen Fiol, who's the stage director for it. Second time you've done it at the U of I, and the conductor is the director of opera at the U of I, is Eduardo Diaz-Munoz. And if you'd like tickets, you can call the Krannert Center, area 217-333-6280. Visit their website at krannertcenter.com. Steve, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
And I'll be there on Saturday. I look forward to seeing what this actually seeing the comedy as well as hearing the whole thing come together.
Wonderful. Hope you come and bring all your friends.